Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for the show. Tuesday edition with Amari Sankofa, like we do every single week on this show. He is from The Athletic. He covers the Grizzlies. What's going on, man?
Mark, my guy. How's everything going?
It's going well. The work is slowing down a bit for the holidays for myself, my real job. Obviously, most people know this. Podcasting is not does not support the family as much as I wish it did. It does not. But it's slowing down. And we had a game last night. We were both there. It was a fun game, I thought. I thought the Grizzlies were going to throw that one away. I think everybody thought the Grizzlies were going to throw that one away. Right off the bat, though, how much does that say about this team? I know you asked some of the players about this. You know, it's a game that I think they maybe would have lost 12, 15 games ago. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they definitely would have. I think we saw it through the early portion of the season that, you know, this team just didn't really have much of a poise to it. Right. They would become undone in the third quarter a lot. And obviously when you have a team that's extremely young as they are, that's kind of what happens. They, you know, you have to learn how to win games. And last night they had that poise to them. They were up 15 at halftime and they had some of the craziest turnovers I've seen in a while, honestly, in that fourth quarter. You know, it almost looked like they were trying to throw the game away at parts, but I think they finished with like a 9-4 run, 11-4 run, something like that. Jai had a couple of big shots. Jaren Jackson had a big three-pointer. Brandon Clark and Jai, they actually both played some really good defense down the stretch. And it was definitely a step forward for them in that it wasn't just Jai's fourth quarter heroics. It was a team effort to, you know, like, throw the game away, but also lock down against a really good Heat team and figure out how to pull a win off.
Yeah, Ja only had six points in the fourth quarter, so it really wasn't a game where, you know, he had to be the Ja Morant that we kind of have grown to love in the fourth quarter, but he didn't have to be that guy to get that W. I always say this on the show that, you know, learning how to win is a real thing in this league. Where do you land on that? You know, rookies and kind of learning how to put games away.
It's definitely something you have to learn how to do. You have teams like the Heat. You have a veteran guy and Jimmy Butler who's been doing this for a while. And they just have some good players. You know, Bam obviously is a young guy, but he's having a great season. But teams like that, you know, like Coach Spo, I mean, he's been there for about 11 or 12 years. You just learn how to win. You learn how to execute. You learn how to stay calm under pressure. Those are all things that are hard to learn without game experience. And it's just something that young teams inherently can overcome. It doesn't matter how talented you are. It takes a while to figure out how to close those games out. So that's a definite step forward. You know, I think what really stood out to me and to a lot of people is that Taylor Jenkins closed the game with Ja, Jaren, and DeAnthony Melton and Brandon Clark on the court. And we hadn't really seen a lot of Ja, Jaren, and Brandon minutes together this season. And the fact that they were able to close the game out, you know, along with DeAnthony Melton, who, of course, has been great, and Jay Crowder, who, you know, quite honestly was pretty bad last night, but, you know, he didn't lose the game for them, is definitely encouraging, given that four of those guys, you know, are more than likely the future of this team.
Yeah, it was interesting to note that DeAnthony Melton, he was at 25 minutes, Brandon Clark 25 minutes. That was more than Kyle Anderson, Tyus Jones, Jonas Valanciunas, Dylan Brooks. What do you make of DeAnthony Melton closing the game, but also out-minuting a lot of those other guys?
Definitely. I think a big thing about D'Anthony Melton, like, he's just such a disruptive defender. I mean, he has extremely long arms, and he is just very, very active. He's active on the boards. He's active in steals. He can block shots. For a guy who is about 6'3", he actually plays a lot bigger than a 6'3" guy. You know, you actually look at the numbers, and I think he has one of the absolute best offensive rebound percentages of any guard in the NBA. So it's just something he's really gifted at doing. And I think just from a positional standpoint, he's a guy that just gives you so much at that shooting guard position. He plugs a lot of holes. Obviously, when you have Jaren out there as your five, you're not going to grab a lot of rebounds. So having D'Anthony Melton and Brandon Clark out there together really does fix a lot of rebounding issues. You know, I think leading up to that Jaren Jackson three, the Grizzlies grabbed four offensive rebounds, and D'Anthony Melton grabbed two of them, and Brandon Clark grabbed one. So you know, you see them do stuff like that, and it's pretty obvious why Brandon Clark's become such a fixture in the rotation in the last 2 weeks or so.
What do you think that does? I mean, D'Anthony Melton in his minutes, what do you think that does to the likes of Grayson Allen and Tyus Jones? Obviously, Marco Gudrich didn't even play in the game last night, so his time, you know, may have come to an end as a regular rotation player. He's obviously had a chance to be out there. He's had a chance to show what he can do for this team and play at an NBA level. He never really did. And he obviously didn't get in the game last night at all. So, that's an indication for us that, you know, he's probably on the outside looking in now. But what do you think that does for like, you know, Tyus Jones and Grayson Allen and those other wings out there, that D'Anthony Melton? I know it's probably Taylor Jenkins said after the game that it was more, you know, he likes to ride the hot hand, and he's done that in lots of games. We've seen him do that all the time. But do you think that affects Tyus Jones or Grayson Allen as much as it did last night on a regular basis?
I think it will. I think D'Anthony Melton has been significantly better than Tyus and Grayson Allen. And he's obviously a very different player from both of those guys. So I still think that there are things that you can get from a Grayson, you know, as far as shooting Tyus Jones as far as his playmaking, that you're not necessarily going to get from D'Anthony Melton. But D'Anthony's also been a much better defender and rebounder that Grayson and Tyus have been as playmakers and shooters respectively. You know, and I think if you're just giving minutes to the best guy, D'Anthony Melton's certainly been that guy. And there's certainly a little bit of a glut in the rotation right there. And as you mentioned, Marco didn't play last night. And honestly, I kind of feel like a long time coming. I mean, Marco just hasn't really been that great this season outside of, you know, very small flashes here and there of him actually being able to be a good playmaker on offense. He just hasn't been comfortable. He hasn't been the guy that the Grizzlies wanted him to be when they signed him this past offseason. And, you know, like, there's obviously still plenty of time for him to get there. But as of now, if you're coaching to win games, you're going to go with D'Anthony Melton and not Marco. And I think Marco leaving the rotation is probably something that was a long time coming. But even when you look at the minutes from last night, I mean, Tyus Jones only played about 16.
Right.
D'Anthony Melton played 25. And, you know, I mean, we see very clearly that D'Anthony Melton is almost approaching 6th, 7th man status. You know, I think he was the first guy off the bench last night. So there's been a pretty clear gap between him and the rest of the wings outside of Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to see what he is going to do going forward in the rest of the games. Like I mentioned, he Tyus Jones only like 15 or 16 minutes last night. So I'll be interested to see what he gets, you know, Wednesday and going forward for the rest of the games, and just kind of seeing where, I mean, obviously they really like him. The coach staff really likes him. Taylor really likes him. So, and he played quite well. He had some, you know, bad turnovers late in the game. But you know, that zone offense really threw everybody for a loop and it kind of, you know, it took John Moran off his game for a few minutes, and just something you don't see a lot. And that I kind of attribute that more to anything other than what D'Anthony Melton is doing. But let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll continue our conversation with Amari Sankofa after the break. Welcome back to the show. Talk with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic, like we do every single Tuesday on this show. Make sure you go and subscribe to the podcast and whatever platform you're using, whether that's Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, and if you're in Apple iTunes, make sure you go leave a review for the show. It really helps us in the iTunes rankings. But make sure you subscribe so you don't miss conversations like this we're having today with Amari every single day. Coming up tomorrow will be Joe Monex, and then Friday, David Cobb as well, like we do every single week. We talked about Tyus Jones a little bit before the break. Do you think with Tyus, it is just a system and just getting into a groove and he'll get there eventually? Or do you think it's just, you know, the offense and what we're asking from him is just too much?
I think for him, it's definitely, I think he'll get better with time for sure. The Grizzlies are playing a much different style than, you know, they ran in Minnesota. It's much faster. It's much more. I actually talked to Tyus about this last week. You know, the Grizzlies don't do a lot of set play calls relative to some other teams. It's much more of a system, and different actions trigger different actions. And Tyus, when he was in Minnesota, yeah, you know, especially under Coach Tibbs, where, you know, I think he really kind of blossomed under, you know, Tibbs is much more of a, you know, we're going to run set plays every single down. Yeah, so right. Tyus Jones has very clear directives on what he should be doing. And obviously, you know, he's a guy that's slippery and, you know, is a really good passer, takes care of the ball, and he can flourish in that type of system. I think one thing about Taylor Jenkins' system is that it empowers guys to be scorers. I mean, you know, we see Jay Crowder taking more than 6 threes a game, and he hasn't been hitting very many of them, but the system dictates that, you know, if you have a shot that you like, you take it. You know,
yep.
And Jay Crowder has seen a lot of three-pointers that he's liked.
Jay Crowder loves three-pointers.
He loves three-pointers. And Tyus is not that type of guy. Tyus, I mean, he's never been a great shooter, but, you know, I mean, but he's shooting a career worst right now. He's not even shooting 25%. I think he only took 3 shots last night. A lot of what the system kind of dictates is just not what he's comfortable doing. Yeah, like, and I think another thing, too, is that Ja is a scoring threat. So Ja can afford to take a step back as a scorer, you know, during the first half, as he's typically done, because, you know, defense is still up to respect that he could get to the hoop pretty easily. You know, Tyus just isn't that type of threat. So I think, you know, it's almost like you're playing 4-on-5 offensively. Sometimes the Tyus is out there because defenses, you know that he's just not going to do a whole lot out there. So with him, you know, I think it's just going to take time for him to get used to the new system, get used to maybe being a guy who can take more shots here and there. And I also think that it's also just a bad personnel fit and that this team doesn't have enough shooters for him to pass to as well. So I think there's a lot going on. And I do think he'll figure it out. Like, he's a good player. He's a smart player. But it really can't be understated just how different this is for him compared to what he was used to with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, it's a lot of outside influences with Tyus Jones. I think you're right. I kind of fall in the same category there. There's just there are a lot of things going on with Tyus Jones that are really kind of out of his control. Like you mentioned, shooters. Just, you know, the bench he's playing with just sometimes just isn't great. You know, just, you know, at times out there last night there was like Solomon Hill, Brandon Clark, Tyus, Kyle Anderson, and De'Anthony Melton. Just guys, there's just not a lot of offense out there. So you get a situation like that, and it's just difficult, especially if you're a pass first kind of guy, and you're a guy that is, you know, you predicate your game on setting other people up, getting into the lane and setting other people up. You know, that really limits him what he's able to do. Do you think Kyle Anderson falls into that category as well of just, you know, he's probably better in more rigid offense? Or I think Kyle's been good this year. I'm just curious if you think he falls into that same kind of category with Tyus.
I think one thing about Kyle, and Kyle obviously isn't, you know, he doesn't have a reputation as a great offensive player, but Kyle Anderson is a much more willing scorer than Tyus Jones. Kyle and Anderson, like, he can get to the rim. You know, he has those funky Euro steps and everything that, you know, like, you look at his field goal percentages and, you know, the shot chart, and he's pretty good near the rim. You know, he's just not a shooter, but once he gets inside, he's pretty good at finishing. And Kyle Anderson just looks a lot more comfortable offensively than Tyus has. You know, like, Kyle doesn't seem to struggle with taking those shots. You know, even if he hesitates and pump fakes on the three-pointer, which he does a few times a game, a lot of times he'll take that and he'll get to the rim and he'll hit a little nifty floater or something to that effect. So he has some things in his toolbox that Tyus just doesn't really have. You know, I also think that Kyle doesn't have the ball in his hands as much, and that's something that he's also accustomed to having. He's more of a secondary playmaker than a lead point guard, which, I mean, like, he could be both, but he's more comfortable being kind of like that secondary playmaker on the court because he knows his value is also on defense, where he's a versatile defender and he's a pretty solid rebounder. So I think with Kyle, it just comes a little bit easier for him because he could just do more things within this offense. He doesn't need the ball to do anything. You know, Tyus isn't really a catch-and-shoot guy. He doesn't really have, like, a, all right, I'm not going to hit the three, so, you know, I'm not going to take it to the rim and float it up. He'll do it occasionally, but that just isn't as natural for him as it is for Kyle.
I think that's an absolute – that's a really spot on. I mean, Kyle can do a lot of different things. He's a versatile player. But also, like, goes back to the other point. I think they really have empowered Kyle to go and drive the lane and really score the basketball. Something that the Latch coaching staff last year just did not do. And I think Taylor, you know, to your point earlier, that empowering players to go take shots they're comfortable with, go get baskets. You know, is it a system, an offense that, and even Taylor mentioned it last night, that they're getting good looks on multiple actions. It's not a set play. You know, their first, you know, high screen, and there are a lot of actions off of that, but a lot of passing you saw in the first half last night, and it gets players to go out and make plays. And so you see that a lot more from Kyle Anderson this year, and really have, and really any previous seasons that he's been in the league. So, and I love that because I think Kyle, with the ball in his hands, is an excellent player. Let's take one more quick break. We'll come back and finish up with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Amari Sankofa like we do every single Tuesday on this show. I want to finish up with you just kind of some general ideas of this Grizzlies team. They're obviously winning at a much higher clip than I personally thought they would be. They're a better team than I thought they would be with this roster. And I think that really falls on Taylor Jenkins and this coaching staff. I mean, there was a point last night in this game with 4 minutes left that they had struggled with that zone much of that fourth quarter and allowed that Heat team to get back in the game. And at the 4 minute mark, they took a timeout, and whatever Taylor Jenkins said in that timeout, got them back on track, whatever they did, because they immediately remembered that they could attack the basket even in a zone. And they really shut that game down. You know, is this team, first of all, are you surprised at where they're at right now? I'm surprised. Are you surprised at the amount of wins, but just the competitiveness they're playing with against really good teams?
I'm a little bit surprised by it. You know, I think a lot of it roots back to Ja Morant being as good as he's been. I mean, he had 20 and 10 last night. And I think that Ja being that good has raised the ceiling a little bit for what, you know, I thought this team could accomplish. They're not going to be They don't look like a bottom six team at this point, at least. The NBA as a whole, outside of the top 7-8 teams, is pretty terrible. And the Grizzlies look like they're better than at least six teams right now. And, I also think they've been a little bit better, actually, than their record indicates. I think they are 10-17 right now.
Yeah.
But you remove the games that Ja hasn't played, and that record actually looks a little bit better. I mean, I'm looking at it now, and Ja has missed 6 games this season. He missed 4 straight, you know, at the beginning of December, obviously, with the back injury. And of those 6 games, the Grizzlies only won 1. So you can remove 5 losses and 1 win from the overall record. And with Ja, you know, they're actually like 9-12 or 9-13, which is a lot better. So this team, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, in 21 starts that Ja's made this season, they are 9-12. So that is much better than I think anybody could have expected the Grizzlies to be with Ja Morant this season. I mean, that's a couple of those games came down to the wire too. You know, they had some close ones against the Lakers, Clippers early in the season. They had some that came down to the wire that they just didn't pull off. This is a solid team. I think another thing too is that they haven't really had the shooting necessary to run Taylor Jenkins' scheme in the way that it's meant to fully be run. You know, you have guys taking a lot of threes. I can't really hit them. But we even see whenever Dylan Brooks has a good game, they typically win. It just shows that this offense has a much higher ceiling when, you know, it's actually being run by guys who can shoot. So I would say that they're ahead of schedule for sure for all of the reasons I just mentioned.
Well, I tweeted this last night that I can't wait till Taylor Jenkins gets some better personnel. I mean, again, this roster is fine, but, you know, like you mentioned, once he actually gets some actual shooters out there besides just a Dylan Brooks, because, yes, when Dylan Brooks scores more than 20, it coincides with the win, because, you know, that's what this offense is predicated upon, is threes, fast break offense, playing up tempo, all those type of things. And so, I can't wait till we get some different personnel that really fits more of what he's trying to do. And yeah, John Morant's been like way better than anyone anticipated. I think I responded to someone the other day on Twitter, and I was like, you know, if you're claiming that you said John Morant was going to be this quickly, you're just lying, because no one has been this good this quickly in a long, long time as a rookie. And John Morant's doing some amazing things right now on the court with the Grizzlies team. Last question, I'll get you out of here. Where do you land on the idea of the Grizzlies making the playoffs? Losing the pick to the Celtics this year. Do you care? Do you think they're going to lose it? Does it even matter?
I think if you're going to miss the pick, this is a good year to do it, only because the Grizzlies have a clear need for a forward, and this just isn't a forward-heavy draft. This also isn't a shooting-heavy draft, honestly. You look at a lot of the guys sort of in like that top tier, and there's like a lot of point guards, but there aren't just like a lot of knockdown shooting wings, which is what the Grizzlies really need. Like, if you get look at the number one pick and get Anthony Edwards, then the rebuild's done. Like, you're in phenomenal shape. But beyond that, I don't think losing the pick this year is the worst thing. They're three games back at the seventh seed right now. There are six teams in the Western Conference with a winning record. I think they are the same distance from the seventh seed as they are from being 14th in the conference, and are currently 13th. So I think that says a lot. At this point, you're just as likely to make the playoffs as you are to finish with a bottom two record in the West. And there's a lot of teams in that sort of tier that I wonder, what are they going to do? Like, they have to figure something out. Are the Spurs, who are currently one game better than the Grizzlies, going to decide to be sellers at the deadline to get assets? Because that's right. Another team that might be worse than the Grizzlies going down the stretch. The Trailblazers, are they going to try and swing a trade and improve? Like, what are they going to do? What are the Timberwolves going to do? What is OKC going to do? Like, there are all these teams that just kind of seem to be in this weird purgatory. And that's before you even get to the Eastern Conference, which might be in even worse shape when you look at the quality of teams at the bottom half. So yeah, this is a bad year to be a bad team. And the Grizzlies being 9-12 with John Morant may not even be that bad of a team. So I don't know what's going to happen down the stretch. The Grizzlies are going to make some trades too, obviously. But it's a really weird place for them to be in. This is year one of a rebuild, and you are seven games under 500, and you may not be one of the nine worst teams in the NBA. That's a pretty rare situation. So it's definitely going to be an interesting race to follow over the next few months.
Well, it also goes back to a lot of teams, like you mentioned, the Warriors, Spurs, who we just thought they'd be good. But I just thought the Spurs would be good because I can never count out the Spurs until they're actually bad, till the end of the season. But, the Warriors, we thought they were going to be good. We thought they'd be better than they are anyway. And so there are a lot of teams out there like that that just haven't materialized. And a lot of teams that you thought that would be better, like the Jazz, who have not been as good as we thought they would be. And so there is definitely a lot of flexibility and fluctuation in the standings right now, overall, just in the whole NBA as a whole. So, I think you're probably right. I don't think it matters. I mean, I don't think you're a situation where you got to go out there and try to lose. You just go out there and play your game, and the chips kind of fall where they may, and give up the pick. Just give it to the Celtics. I don't think it's a situation like last year where you're trying to get a good pick, really trying to tank and get a really good pick at the end of the year. And, as we saw in the draft this year, luck has a lot to do with it. Obviously, John Morant is being super super lucky that the Grizzlies got what they did. Anyway, Mar, what can people read from you this week?
Yeah, so I have a John Morant-centric story that should be coming out tomorrow. I won't spoil the contents of it, but it's certainly a story that is timely and something I'm sure people will want to read. And then I'll actually go in and pull out something Peter Davison wrote today about the Grizzlies being fun, you know, for the first time in a while. And, you know, it's certainly a crowd-pleasing story and, you know, something I'm sure people will agree with. So just two things to read if you're a subscriber. And if you're not, go ahead and subscribe. It's not that expensive. I'm sure we're going to have some Christmas deals coming up. So go ahead and follow me and keep on the lookout for that.
It's a super, super good digital stocking stuffer subscription to The Athletic. It's super easy to do, super cheap. Like Omari mentioned, I don't notice it come out of my bank account. I'm sure you won't either. So if you love the people that you love, go and get them a subscription to The Athletic. If you also love the people that you love, tell them to subscribe to this podcast because they will love listening to Omari and myself talk about the Grizzlies every single Tuesday of the week. Man, I appreciate you coming on. Let's do it again next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Until next time.